What you said, the word trust, that we have trust in the police, that would be a huge step. And I think you have taken a small step, but a great step toward that, going through this process. Congratulations.
I might just highlight one additional thing. And it's that, you know, Terry being out there in the streets to document what happened in the summer of 2020 was a tremendous service to everybody, to history, to members of this city. Being a press member isn't legally necessarily a difference of value or elitism necessarily for somebody being out there in the streets. The rights that Terry was afforded is afforded to all of us. Really, what you look at is conduct. And I think the police saw anybody who stood in their way as a bad actor and wanted to treat them as a criminal, when truly we should have been looking in the other direction. And if they had that kind of self-reflection, if they had that kind of real scrutiny, I think that we would see a lot more of this.
Terry, I echo Juan's comments. I think this event that you were documenting or attempting to document, the protests in the streets of Portland after the murder of George Floyd, that protest, it was a pivotal event, not only in the history of Portland, but in the Black Lives Matter movement, too. So thank you for your efforts and your work, and I hope you continue to do well and the best of luck.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with photojournalist Terry Jacobs and Juan Chavez, civil rights attorney with Oregon Justice Resource Center. Thank you to our guests, our engineers, and thank you for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO has a mobile app. You can listen to all your favorite shows, subscribe to KBOO Podcast, even set KBOO as your alarm clock. Just look for KBOO on the iTunes and Google Play Store. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review.
1, 2, 3, 4. Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. Talking about Hip Hop is 50, it's a series of interviews that we've been doing over the past year, looking at the 50th anniversary of the creation of this vibrant music and culture. A lot of people have been doing big things around it, and one of the people we wanted to talk to is no stranger to our airwaves. His name is Jahi, longtime artist and activist, you know, a member of Public Enemies camp, and somebody who's doing what we say you should do. People sometimes are saying, well, how are we going to get something done? When are they going to do it for us? And Jahi said, well, hold my coffee. I'm going to put something together, and has found a way to really celebrate 50 years of hip hop and beyond. So welcome to the show, Jahi. And you talked about fulfilling a need of archiving important artifacts and papers and materials that people have accumulated over the years, looking at it from a local perspective. And you've been off and running. It's been a gargantuan task, but you seem to be the person up to the job. So welcome to the show, and how do you feel about hip-hop being 50?
Hey, Dave, it's always an honor to be with you. I was thinking about this yesterday. I could just archive my conversations with you on Hard Knock Radio for both of our archives. Always an honor and always a pleasure. But in terms of the 50th anniversary of hip-hop, I'm in a space of gratitude and being thankful. I'm really thankful that I was alive during this time, the first 50 of hip hop, as we get ready to move to the next 50 clip of hip hop. I'm glad I was a part of the first 50, and I'm glad that the creator, the ancestors, and all other positive energies have wrapped their energies around me to be able to create, for the first time at the Oakland Museum of California, a Black man, he, him, respect to all pronouns, but a Black man like myself that is from the culture as a practitioner, get a chance to curate the entire month, the Fridays, from 5 o'clock to 9 p.m., which will include our induction on August 11th. So I feel really grateful. I feel really thankful. I have a lot of work to do. I have a very small team. But what I've learned in this process is it's not about the size of anything other than your intention and your heart. And that's what I've been moving on.
Has hip-hop reached its potential? And is it unfair to relegate it to having to meet a particular plateau? Meaning, do we look back and say, well, has rock and roll reached its full potential? Has country music reached its full potential? And what does that mean? Do we define it in terms of album sales and concerts that people do? Is it a state of mind? How do you measure success if we're looking at 50 years of hip hop?
Well, to your first part of your question, has hip hop reached its full potential? I would say no, because hip hop is a part of an ancient continuum. It's just the title of what I call the unbreakable DNA, that from the moment we left the western shores of Africa, that we, you know, they called it capoeira in Brazil. They called it reggae music in Jamaica. They called it blues. They called it field music. They called it funk. And we are in the iteration where they call it hip hop. So I don't think that we've reached our full potential. I think we are a part of an ancient continuum. In terms of how people measure success in hip hop, I would say for me individually as an artist, when I started my journey 24 years ago, I decided that I was going to create my own definition of what my success was, what my goals would be. I was not going to let an industry determine what that would be. I was going to move from a cultural space as opposed to an industry space. I would operate within the industry, but maintain a cultural position. And I feel like hip hop is a house with many rooms, and there are some rooms that need to be shut down completely. There's some rooms need to be remodeled. There's some rooms that are still sacred and holy ground and are fine. I believe that we are a part of a culture that is in the process of continuous transformation. We have done some great and incredible things. And there also are some things that we have to address. I'm very curious to see how the next 50 years will go, given where we are. And as I said, as I started, I'm really glad that I'm a part of the first 50.
You mentioned not defining yourself by the industry, but the music industry is how many people have got to know aspects of this culture. Is hip hop the music industry? And what I'm and I'm asking that, understanding that a lot of people strive to obtain goals that are set by the industry. How many records can you sell? How many people do you bring to your concerts? How much money can you make? How will it be defined? Will they show me on TV? Those are all industry derivative. Those are all part of the music industry. So how do you separate hip hop from the music industry, or is it one and the same? Do they overlap? How do we look at that?
I don't necessarily separate it. I recognize that it all exists. You know, I'm just at a stage in a phase, Davey, where there's a line that I have chosen for myself, and I'm going to hold that particular line. And what I know about hip hop, what we all should know, is that hip hop is a community thing. It started in the community. It did not start in an industry. It started in a community. It is human skills. I love the fact that this month I get an opportunity to really embrace my DJing self and really build on my human skill there. I believe that the music industry is a thing that has attached itself to hip hop as culture. And for some people, the metrics, the likes, the mentions, is their barometer for success. And that is a choice by people to do so. But I contend to say this, Dave, that if we don't continue to push the culture, because in the culture is where you have the values, the morals, the principles, that's where culture, that's what lives inside of culture. What lives inside of industry is metrics and, you know, illusions and those type of things. So for me, especially because I turned 52 this year, you know, the values, the morals, the character of hip hop has become far more important and significant to me. And the industry side to me is like way in the rear view, because I don't really follow those metrics for my success. If I would have followed the industry's rules, Davey, I would have been a failure a long time ago. I would have given up a long time ago. The industry would have already spit me out and said that I have no value and no place and that I'm not important. But because I continue to come from a cultural space, I recognize, like a bluesman, I'm a journeyman in this culture. And that if I decide to pick up a microphone and drop a song today, that if 1,000 people listen to it, great. And if one person listened to it, that's also great because of how I define what my success is. So, I'm at a place now, Davey, normally I get all into it with you on the industry side. But what I'm going to say is that people see the industry for what it is. And if they don't, just take a good look. But I am really inviting people, as we celebrate the 50th anniversary, to look at it from a cultural lens and try to pick those best things out of the culture that we can build from and apply those things to your life. Hip hop is a lifestyle.
Yeah, but let me ask you, you know, what defines the industry? What defines hip hop? And that's an important question to ask. Let me contextualize that, because one of the things that we are challenged with is that we live in a society that has hijacked a lot of different quote unquote cultures, and people within particular demographics sometimes unknowingly have defined themselves by a standard that has been set up artificially. So, for example, being a man, if you have a particular connection to a faith or connection to a people that you derive from, may be very different than how we define manhood in a societal sense. So manhood means you go out, you provide for your family, you get a job, you take care of your people. Some of those values may be intrinsic in what we do as human beings, and some of them may not. And so at 52, yeah, you have a lifetime to have examined that, but I have a 20-year-old that's listening right now and haven't had any of that exposure. So help us walk through that. Especially since you are putting up a curation and giving people a path to look at, how do you distinguish between the two?
Oh, that's good. That's all good. You know, for me, hip hop is a collective consciousness. It's an attitude. It's a way of being. It's a lifestyle. I don't want to sound like I'm echoing Blastmaster KRS, but he's right that it's a lifestyle. It's what, you know, rap is what I do. DJing is what I do. Curation is what I do. And hip hop is what I live. But I'll go back to this attitude and the mannerism. It's a collective consciousness. And that mannerism and attitude and consciousness of confidence, belief in yourself. Just as a 20, if you said I was talking to a 20-year-old, the idea of confidence and belief in yourself is really a part of hip hop culture. And if you never decide to rap, DJ, graffiti write, breakdance, beatbox, fashion, anything, if you decide not to do any of those things, you still can have the attitude and the confidence of hip hop to move throughout your daily life. You said something. You said, you know, as men, you know, we get up, take care of our families, get a job, whoop, whoop, whoop. I mean, even that for me doesn't really fully resonate because I come from a generation of Black men who are entrepreneurs, who work for themselves. They didn't go work for other people. So that's a nuance in my life. So what I would say about hip hop as culture is that if you look at it from a cultural lens, looking for morals, values, principles, peace, love, unity, safely having fun, introspection, storytelling, fun, creativity, then if you put that in your mind first and in your consciousness first, then you're going to run into a Gift of Gab from Blackalicious. You're going to run into a Pam the Functress. You will find these type of folks because that's the energy that you have set on yourself. Now, from an industry point of view, if you like, I'm trying to get this bag, I'm trying to get this honey, I'm trying to whoop, whop, and whoop. If you put that in your mind, then you're going to run into Gucci Man and, you know, I'm not, you know, these folks that I think really embrace the industry. And so, you know, and so if you look at that as a scale, you have on one side, you got the industry and you see what that is and how it defines itself. And on the one side, you have culture. And now you as a human being growing in this world, you remember, Davey, I got son, Muata's 28. So I'm still dealing with, you know, he sent me two songs by Kodak Black and NBA Youngboy. And I was like, I don't want to listen to this, but I got to put my ear to it because my son, who understands culture and industry, sent me some industry music. And out of that, I was able to have a conversation with him and remind him of, hey, I heard that. And here I still see the culture here. So again, looking at that as a scale, I feel like we as human beings in the 21st century, as hip hop moves beyond 50, we have these new opportunities and choices of what we can tap into. And for me, I am encouraging people to tap into the cultural side. I am curating experiences that represent the cultural side. And what I hope is that out of those experiences, people walk away feeling refreshed, feeling revived, and having a sense of what we really mean when we say culture. For example, on Friday at the Oakland Museum of California, we start our Hip Hop 50, and I'm DJing a set with African music and reggae music. And people been saying to me, but yo, I thought this was Hip Hop 50 all month. And I'm like, it is Hip Hop 50, and I'm gonna be playing some Ebo Taylor, some Fela, some Miriam Makeba. I'm gonna be playing some Chronics. I'm gonna be playing some old Shabba Ranks. Why? Because I know from a cultural point of view that hip hop comes out of reggae and African music. I understand that the first boom bap is the djembe and the djun-djun, the sounds of the drum. I know that the African point of view is that the drum is the first instrument as a form of communication. We know that a drum inside of hip hop, I mean, again, think about I Need a Beat by LL Cool J, how it was just drums, you know. So again, the expansiveness and the opportunity to see hip hop as culture, I think we need more venues and experiences where people can feel that. And you know the difference, you know, when you're at an industry event and when you're at a cultural event, and then you know when you're at an event where both of those things take place.
But I also been at events where folks are expressing themselves in the reality that they're dealing with. Long before an industry existed, you know, people were drinking 40s and people were, you know, having a nefarious side to them and connected themselves to the activity that were going on. Right, they prided themselves as being a part of a particular lifestyle that some people could call criminal. In fact, some of what you're saying, I remember in the 70s, elders sitting us down and saying, what you're doing is an embarrassment to where our people are from, you know, and, you know, all this stuff is this is not why we march with Dr. King. This is not why Malcolm did what he did. And they weren't talking to an NBA young boy or a Gucci man. They were talking to pioneers that are, you know, lauded today, who we're honoring in these 50 years. Now, over the course of time, some of those people had to come around and go, you know what, this is a part of us, you know, and I'm not sure if they do that because they're part of the academy and this is the hot thing and they want to attach themselves, or if they're doing this because they really now see the connection. But what was raw and uncut was seen as something that was uncouth and wild and something that needed to go away. And in fact, many did their best to try to make it go away. They wouldn't embrace it on the radio. They didn't nurture us. They didn't do anything. And people had to figure it out. And so now that we're looking back, I want to be specific, because I know you said collective consciousness, but collective consciousness can be many things to many people. You know, how do we connect to the connected consciousness that you feel this culture is ideally supposed to represent?
You could come every Friday from 5 to 9 p.m. to the Oakland Museum of California.
No, we know that. We know that.
I'm not saying that in a fun way, like a marketing way. What I'm saying is,
right,
this, Dave, is that I remember what you're speaking to. I'm going to personalize it so I can speak to it and try to answer it in a very specific way. I remember in the early 80s, after Rapper's Delight, when hip hop started to take root in the streets in my neighborhood and community. And I remember old ladies like, man, turn that off. That ain't music. You want to hear some music? Let me play some of this Teddy Pendergrass or blah, 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 right? That's real music. People had no reference for what was happening.
Right. And that was industry, by the way, when they played the Teddy Pendergrasses and all that.
We'll see again, you know, Dave, for me, way I grew up, Teddy Pendergrass, Aretha Franklin, Earth, Wind & Fire, Spinners, Commodores, that all took place in people's houses and backyards and barbecues. That was a community thing as well. I know all of Earth, Wind & Fire songs, not because I went to a club, it's because, you know, my Uncle Poop on the weekend, that's how he set off the barbecue.
Right, but you know, but I mean, they were still 3-minute songs versus a song that might have been deliberately set and might have lasted 20 minutes because it was ceremonial, it was part of healing.
I was a teenager, so I didn't know, you know, but again, I get that in terms of the industry, which is why I'm glad that I got put on in 1989 and 90 to Fela when I heard a 12-minute song and an 18-minute song. I said, wait a minute, this dude didn't even start saying a word until eight or nine minutes in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Really blew my mind open. So again, what I will say is this, specifically when I say collective consciousness, you're right, that could mean a lot of things. If you want to, it depends on what you want to get into. And for what I'm speaking about as it relates to hip hop on this 50th anniversary is getting into the expansiveness of it, seeing the interconnectedness between African and reggae music to hip hop, seeing that a collective consciousness is, you know, the idea of peace, love, unity, safely having fun, the idea of hip hop entrepreneurship, the idea of hip hop educators. You know, these are things that can be collective consciousness, that in those things that we can do something. As it relates to what the industry said and people did not want to embrace it and didn't want to play it on radio and, you know, gatekeepers and, you know, not green lighting certain things and turning other things off. We know what those things, we've seen that. And what the blessing is here we are at the 50th anniversary of hip hop, and we still are global culture. We still have industry stuff happening that is like on the surface that everybody, you can pay attention if you want to, just like diamonds. Diamonds are not on the surface. You got to dig under the ground. If you continue to dig within our culture, you're going to find all of these great individuals, great artists. I can't, you know, Davey, I can't tell you how many artists I've picked up from Eastern Africa recently, or St. Kitts, you know, a DJ I found, you know. So it's like, again, I'm going to go back to what I said earlier. The human skill, the human aspect of hip hop is still growing and it is still thriving. The industry is what it is. And people are going to have to determine how they want to interface and interact with that over the next 50 years. For me, I have spent a lot of time, as they say in reggae music, burning the industry, talking about it and recognizing how it's even personally affected me. Mm-hmm. I'm not devoid of gatekeepers telling me no. I've been through those experiences, but what I have learned out of those experiences, the further I stay away from the industry and the more I try to dive deeper into the culture and the consciousness of hip hop, I find that I have an opportunity to continue to live and thrive. So it helps me to compartmentalize what the industry is. And then also, for the 20-year-old who's all knee deep in the industry, and then one day, you know, they see they homie get killed and murdered based off this industry stuff, and they be like, well, Jahi, man, what else is there, man? And I'd be like, hey, man, have you ever heard the first Diggable Planets album? Do you know who Ladybug Mecca is? And I'm starting to see that there's a larger ear opening, a larger eye opening to see what else is happening, because the short story of what's happening in the industry is that people are getting taken out real quick. And it's interesting that you can put on a persona, I don't care about life, and I'm ready to go anytime. But when life is really on the line, people want to live. And I think that there's an opportunity. There's life in the culture side. And there's work to do inside of the culture side of hip hop as well. In terms of the industry, it is what it is. You can see it for what it is. You can determine you want to be in it. You might be the person that go in it and transform it and make it even better. You might be the person that work inside the industry and Tembisa Mshaka worked inside the industry for years. And now look at her manifesting her own self-care and understanding who she is. So you can learn something out of it. But for me, and what I'm hoping that the community hears from me, not just in voice, but also in work and action, is that I want to create opportunities and experiences that are curated that leave you like, man, I thought I was going to a hip hop event. I thought I was going to hear these songs. I didn't hear none of those songs. I actually heard a whole bunch of songs I never heard before, but hey, that felt good. Wow, this is what exploring and expanding a culture means. This is what it means to, if I was following the industry standard, I could almost tell you by name the songs that I would play and when they would drop. I could tell you that. But from a cultural perspective, you know, I'm going to play some things that people haven't heard, that they might be scratching their heads, because that's the hip hop I came from was always an exploration. And I still feel like when I look at it from a global lens, it still is.
Been talking with Jahi. Tell everybody what's in line for this month of curation at the Oakland Museum.
The Oakland Museum of California, I made a little bit of history, and again, it was not for me, it was for that 20, we're gonna keep talking about that 20-year-old. Here's the truth. The Oakland Museum of California has never had a practitioner of hip hop culture, a black man, lead the Friday nights at the Oakland Museum of California and curate an entire month themed on the celebration of the expansiveness of hip hop culture. Why am I saying this? It's not about me. I don't want any accolades, no props. I'm not here for any of that. What I am attempting, and the reason why you see, if you go to their website and you see my face, is because I wanted you to see a Black man being able to do something in these spaces to motivate and inspire future curators. There are more Black men at the Oakland Museum of California as security guards than they are as executives. And I've been working with all, and shout out to all of the executives and all of the departments I've worked with in the Oakland Museum of California. But it was a learning for them, because every time they had to do any aspect of hip hop at 50, they had to look and talk and deal with a Black man. And that's important, because I want future Black boys and Black girls to know that they can create events and curate experiences and do something artistic and creative inside of these institutions. And that if they need an example of somebody who's done it, use me as an example to motivate them to do that. So I gotta say that first, to contextualize why it's at the Oakland Museum of California and why I'm actually curating it and why you're seeing it the way that you're seeing it. I'm trying to send a bigger message, Davey. You know, if we say the future, that museums and libraries have a future interconnected with hip hop, then we have to be in these roles. And let me just make a distinction. Before I get to the Fridays, I gotta make this distinction. If I say, like, Davey, if you say, I've been doing hip hop, I've been part of hip hop for 30 years. And as a fan, if I say, well, Davey, I've been a part of hip hop for 30 years too, I've been a fan. The fact is we are not the same. Your distinction is far, far greater than a fan's perspective, because you are a doer of the culture. You ain't talking about DJing, you doing DJ. I see you doing that. You are a practitioner. We have to make that distinction, because there are fans of the culture, there are supporters of the culture that might be in some of these positions, but they are not practitioners. And there's a particular lens we have as practitioners of culture that we have to continue to put forward as it relates to hip hop. So that's what I'm doing at the Oakland Museum. And I'm making that distinction because it needs to be said. And with that said, what's going to happen is every Friday, from 5 o'clock to 9 p.m. on this Friday, it is the roots of hip hop. I have Diamana Cora as drummers. We are doing drum circle. I have Queen Amina will do a libation for us. We are following African tradition of pouring libation of respect to our ancestors, and we are going to represent the drum. You want to get your freestyle on? Come freestyle over a djembe in the Junjun, because the roots of hip hop for me, and I believe if people do deep study, will take you back through the transatlantic slave trade back to the African continent. So that's Friday from 5 until 9 p.m. I also have some KQED films, because I want, you know, if you notice, Davey, I'm not talking about rappers. There's no MCs. And the reason why is because we do that all the time. And I'm an MC too. It's a microphone. I'm ready to get on it too. But we more than just MCs. So I want us to see the dance culture and understand how powerful the dance culture in the Bay Area is. So there's films around that. And then on August 11th, the culmination of this work around unity is the Bay Area Hip Hop Archive second induction, where we will induct 55 Bay Area hip hop artists, activists, and educators into a process to preserve themselves for future generations. You have never, the 55 people that are on the flyer and on the poster, it's a first. I haven't seen this diverse group of people come together to agree on the idea of preservation. And I'm saying a first in terms of preservation, because I know I stand on your shoulders, Davey, and what you did at Yerba Buena. I know I stand on the shoulders of a lot of folks here who has done great hip hop work. I am just extending that work. So on August 11th, at 7 p.m. will be the induction ceremony, where we are just gonna salute great community members, and we will begin to share the process of how we will preserve ourselves. And I just want to say that I want to send a thank you early to all of the folks that I participated, because so many people told me, said, you ain't about to get all these artists to agree. And we all are different. We got our own perspectives. I'm even being criticized by some people who are on the list, and it's okay. It's supposed to happen. But we have agreed that preservation is important for what we've done. And I'm gonna do my best to honor that. So that's August 11th. On August 18th, Hip Hop Meets Jazz, the great Destiny Muhammad is gonna give the harp treatment to some really dope songs that you haven't heard in that format. And I'm gonna give you a little cheat sheet. But have you ever, Davey, have you ever heard Getting It by Too Short with a harp?
I've heard a jazz version of his records, but not with a harp.
Hey, so how about The Life by Mystic getting the harp treatment? The Bird's Eye View by Zion I getting the harp treatment? You know, so the opportunity for us to see the connectivity with jazz and hip hop, because we really are all a part of the same family. That's on August 18th. And then on August 25th, Aerosol Artists and Beat Makers Unite. Reefer One, my brother Steady X from over in San Francisco from June Jordan Academy has the J Dilla Academy. We're going to have beat machines and aerosol art station, so people can make art and make beats and share them with the community. So, and that's how we will celebrate. So if you notice, I didn't mention any rappers performing. I didn't mention any headliners. I didn't mention anybody from out of town, because that is also a very important point. I did not need to book anybody outside of the Bay Area, because we got our own champions here. And so this is an Oakland thing. It's a community thing. It's free and open to the community. It's a safe space. It's a transformational space for us to come together. And again, I appreciate and thank the Oakland Museum of California for giving me the opportunity. Shout out to Visit Oakland that showed some support so we could have the things that we needed to honor folks. And that's what it is. This is my contribution. Based on it is my, you know what, I have to even reframe that. It is my thank you to the Bay Area for what you've done for me over these 24 years for hip hop. In return, I'm curating experiences that we can bring our families out and celebrate.
That's the voice of Jahi again. Friday night kicks off a month-long celebration, 50 years of hip hop at the Oakland Museum of Arts. And we appreciate you taking time out to hang with us, Jahi. We look forward to this. We're going to take a break here on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Yeah. Put your ones up. Put your ones up. Yeah. One love and one light. One light and one love. One love and one light. One light and one love. Yeah. R.I.P. to Dave. R.I.P. to Dave. Plug One and Maceo. Man, they helped me to be brave. To be myself, be me, and be I. God's a rapper ever gazing at the night sky sigh. Time is undefeated. Creating an archive before we all get deleted. The culture, I got mad respect. Mad respect. The best time before the industry and the internet. That's facts. Someone to take it back, someone to move it forward. Some are toxic and distorted. I'm not the jury or the judge. On my own square, I don't budge. They talking new guns. I'm like, where is the love? Eating a bowl of black eyed peas. Thinking about so many we lost. Even my own families, my feelings are raw. In the indigo sky, I saw a shooting star. Holding on to life like a claw. I'm still in awe. One love and one light. One light and one love. One love and one light. One light and one love. One love and one light. One light and one love. One love and one light. One light and one love. Full gravity.
attitude, I'm still here. Walking, hooping, boxing, meditation, keep my heart rate straight, that's for real. I'm moving godly in this human terrain. Took a minute seeing losses as gains. Now back to Dave and Paz and Maceo. When they first came out, helped me see a better lane beyond the drug dealer route. And to just be me, I don't wanna get long tooth with it, but De La Soul, the best to ever do it. Have you ever seen a rock live, not YouTube clips? When I play their catalog, it's no skips. I'm still deciphering some of the intricate lyrical. I come from golden era, golden rule to be original, and that's what they was, what they is. 4080 still rule of the music biz. They should be getting his overall glad catalog on DSPs. One day we all will be free. R.I.P. One love and one light. One light and one love. One love and one light. One light and one love. One love and one light. R.I.P. to Gab, R.I.P. to Zumbi, part of my community, feeling it's my duty to say they names, and not just in private. In the Bay right now, it's a little too quiet. R.I.P. Shock G, R.I.P. Jacka, hope there's a mic and stage in the hereafter. R.I.P. to Ty, R.I.P. to Doom, R.I.P. to DMX, we all headed there soon, but while we still here, we got more work to do. The culture is survived by those who keep it true, and that's what I'm gonna do when my time come. You can look back and see I had one hell of a run. Until my days are done, I wake up and don't stop. God bless the world when she gave us hip-hop. Wake up and don't stop. God bless the world when she gave us hip-hop.
One love and one light. One light and one love. One love and one light. One light and one love. One love and one light.
Hard Knocks Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
And you're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. Up next, we have a very special conversation that I'm pleased to have with someone who is a friend to the show, Abba Yehuda. For people that don't know, he's an African Jamaican male with a feminist perspective. Abba Yehuda is a conscious visionary, warm brother, deeply committed to the rebirth of goddess, and who expresses a deep empathy for the suffering of Black women. You know, he's also a partner down at Oak Stop. He's a curator. And today he's on the program to really talk a bit about what's happening there. There's an upcoming La Shashi, an art exhibition featuring recent works by Sashi Kapra. The official opening night is today, August 4th, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Abba Yehuda, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Anita, for inviting me and for taking a little time out to share this information with the people.
No, absolutely. I mean, based on her work, what you've shared with me prior to this conversation, she's definitely worth presenting and letting our listeners have a little in to this amazing artist. With that said, let's start with just providing them with a little bit of a background of who Sashi Kapra is.
Okay, so she was born in Ethiopia, and early in life she was adopted by an Italian family, ironically. You know, and so she basically grew up in Italy, but she has had access to her Ethiopian family, blood relatives, and she returned to Ethiopia every year to visit them. So she is very connected to her roots, but living in Italy, she's also, you know, assimilated into an Italian society. So it's a unique story, very interesting, considering that Ethiopia and Italy has had like a negative relationship over the years because of Italian invasion and colonial enterprises from way back as the 1800s until today, you know. But it's very unique because she has explored her own roots, and she has found herself and created a unique personality out of her present situation as well as her original root foundation as an Ethiopian. So her work is more focused on nature and connecting to nature and finding a voice in her art to speak, you know, at length with spirit animals. Like, for example, she refers to her show as the voice of nature, mm-hmm. you know. So she uses a lot of leaves, and then she doodles and incorporates even some of the Ethiopian fidel, the alphabet, into her work. And the one thing I noticed about her work is that she has created a unique style, which is not easy to do. And it's original also. And I like that a lot about her work.
Explain that further. As a curator, what in particular drew you to her artwork? And then also how, when you speak of the duality of being adopted by an Italian family, but having this Ethiopian background, do you see any of that also manifest or come up directly in her work, even thinking about the very spirit animals that you might not think a wolf would belong with a fish, right? Because one might want to eat it, but the reality is that they could share this space together without it being violent or confrontational. Maybe if you can talk a bit about that.
Yes, and she's, you know... And based on her connection to nature, to plants, to animals, she's chosen to be a vegetarian. And so what struck me about her work, first, like I said, was her originality. Mm-hmm. And what I also see preserved in her work is her return to her roots, her connection to her roots, and wanting to bring that to the surface as well in a very unique way. So she has a particular process by which she produces each piece. Mm-hmm. And that process is unique to her. You know, I have not seen another artist that produces the end result of a work and where the work actually started from, like you could say a blueprint. The blueprint is then destroyed. And then she continued to use what she's taken from